Hello and welcome back to the Isle of Wight show with me, Joe Redstone. My second conversation with the people who work at the Mountbatten Hospice was with Jackie Willer. Jackie has worked at the hospice for 5 years and has been a consultant nurse there for the last 18 months. In our conversation, Jackie talks about her work, some of the misconceptions there are around what the hospice does, and also how we can all have those difficult conversations about death, dying, and bereavement with our loved ones. It's a fascinating conversation. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. So, without further ado, here is my conversation with Jackie Willer.
I'm here today talking to Jackie, and Jackie and I, we've actually only just met, so I'm not exactly familiar with even your surname or what your job title is, Jackie. So could you give us a kind of brief introduction to yourself, please?
Okay, so I'm Jackie, my name's Jackie Willer, and I'm one of the consultant nurses here at Mountbatten. I've been in the role now for approximately 18 months, and it was a new role to the organisation.
Okay, and so what might a typical day look like for you?
They are very varied, obviously. No 2 days are the same. But I look after my own patients on the inpatient unit. So as a consultant nurse, I have allocated patients that don't see a medical consultant. It's all down to me. And we have a nurse-led team.
Okay, and so are you're interacting directly with patients?
Yes. So I will do a ward round just like a normal consultant would do, see families and the patients themselves and talk to them about their condition and where they're going and what we're doing with them.
When I was talking to Matt, one of the things that we discussed was the misconceptions that we in the general public might have around some of the things that happen up here in the hospice. In terms of your role, what might those misconceptions be?
I think for many people that come into the hospice, it's a big decision and not everybody wants to come. And like you say, because there's fears of what might happen in here. And some of the thoughts that people have is that you just come to a hospice to die. You're put on medication that helps you die. And it's really, really sad to hear that. And I think from working inside and having the passion that we have for looking after people, it's really sad that people have that fear because it stops them coming earlier. But when they do arrive, it's totally turned around. And that can be within minutes of coming through the doors. And often people have said, whether that's family or patients, that it feels like someone's putting their arms around them. And it just makes them feel really comfortable. You know, and I find that really touching because it's what we want to help people to feel. But we want to get out there. We want to be saying to people, come on, this is not just a place for death. We live here. It's a place for living. And people are diagnosed that they're going to die, but they're living right now. And so we want them to live till they die. And so we try and turn it around and we can have fun. We do all sorts of things in here. And it's a really, really lovely place to be.
So in terms of some of the things that you guys do, what are the ones that you've seen, you know, can be particularly beneficial for people?
I think initially we've got the luxury of time and being able to spend time with people, just being there. And that can be with conversation or without. It's really important. But it's some of the basic things. It's like having fun while you're having a jacuzzi. And it's, you know, watching their face and that, oh my goodness, they wouldn't believe that you'd have a jacuzzi bath in here. I'm sure people just think it's, you come in, it's very dark, you're in a room and that's all you've got. But it's not, there's so much more. And just seeing people's faces when you've done something for them, you know, they're so grateful, they don't need to be, because it's what we do. The pampering, we have people come around doing massages, doing their nails. There's loads of things that just, I don't know, I smile quite a lot. I love what I do and I love this place, and I think everybody works so hard because we've all got the same goal. It's all about making someone happy and giving them what they want till the end of their life. And we're quite open, you know, we talk about death. It used to be very wrapped up in a sense of it's all cotton wool and it's, you don't mention it. but we are more black and white now, and we need to be for people to understand. And we talk about death, we talk about fear of death, we talk about how death will be, and we can still end up laughing. It's just the way it is, you know. People, we talk to a patient today and they're not scared, they're comfortable, they're okay. And giving people that opportunity to ask questions is useful, because normally it's later they'll come back and say, what's it going to be like then? And I'll just sit and have a normal conversation like this and we'll chat about it.
I think it's understandable, the fear that we've got of these discussions around death and dying. Do you have any views on kind of where that might come from?
I think it's more a traditional thing. I think we just didn't talk about death and dying. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't mentioned at the dinner table, was it, in years ago, about someone's died. Now it's more open, and we encourage it to be open. You know, for example, I've got two daughters, and we've talked about my death, we've talked about their deaths, what songs, we've got everything sorted. And it's, we've laughed about it at the same time. But I think that's important, so that we won't have any hang-ups about talking about death. And I think that's one of the biggest things we need to encourage people, is that just talk.
And for a lot of people, and I would definitely include myself in this, that feels like a conversation that I'd like to have with my parents, for instance. But one of the things that would definitely hold me back would be, like, how do you start that conversation?
I think, obviously, being in a hospice, it's that sort of environment, and it's something that can... I find it quite easy, and I don't know why. It might be more difficult in your case at home. It's sometimes the environment, but actually, say it as it is. Be open, honestly. Yeah. It's like, you could, you know, for me, if I was talking to a patient and they were bringing up the subject and maybe, am I dying? You know, you can still talk about that and say, well, how do you feel about that? Do you think you're dying? Where are we at? And you open up a conversation that actually becomes natural. And there's a relief sometimes you see from people that actually, oh my God, I can talk about it. Because it's all in here all the time. Should I ask them? Should I tell my daughter? Do I talk to my wife? But then you go in and it's just and they offload, and it's lovely. Because they feel much better, because it's all out of their head.
Yeah. And is there a process that you guys would go through when somebody first arrives here? Is there a specific kind of sequence of events that you go through, or do you think it's more the general atmosphere of the building just enables people to open up a little bit?
It's probably both. I think the environment is very welcoming. And I think that's a big thing. You've got your own private rooms and bathrooms, so it's described as a hotel from some of our patients. But other than that, then you get a one-to-one. You've got a nurse who's doing admission with you, talking about what you want, what you like, what your future, what your past was like, things like that. And then you've got a doctor doing admission. So you've got two key people there with you. And I believe it just makes them feel so safe. And that's some of the key words that people do express, that they just feel safe. So obviously the doctors talk about medication, they talk about the treatment plan, what the patient's expectations of being here are. Because sometimes they say, well, I'm just coming to die, aren't I? Because I'm in the hospice. We go, not necessarily. And to be fair, I have discharged patients that came to die and they didn't. And so it isn't as it seems. And that wasn't because they got told that they were coming to die. That was their perception, that they were coming to die because they came to the hospice. And it's really, really rewarding to be able to turn that round and get people home. That's where they want to be. I mean, the hospice is a lovely place, but it's not like home. And often people are desperate to get home. And in reality, you think, oh, it's not really that safe. And what about this and what about that? But actually, it's their life. And they should be able to make their own choices in that regard. So I do try to get people home as much as we possibly can. But the ones that don't get home, they still enjoy themselves. we'll bring the odd horse in or a snake to visit them, and some wild birds and things like that to make their day.
Excellent. The One of the things that's definitely been news to me that I didn't realise was the number of people that you guys look after. Matt, I think, said it was somewhere around 1,400 in total. So can you talk to me a little bit? Do you have much involvement with, you know, that sort of wider picture?
To a degree. I mean, obviously that covers the whole of Mountbatten. That includes the day centre, community teams and the inpatient unit. And although I feel that my area is the most important, it's the smallest part, in fact. So we've got the 60 embedded inpatient unit, which sounds quite nice, but actually most of the care is done in the community. I do go out into the community, and I've started as a new part of my role. I thought it'd be good to, when I do discharge patients, to follow them through. So I will now go out to see them at home. And it's not a long-term thing, but it's just that continuity. And often when people are here, they really don't want to go. And I have really difficult decisions to make about discharging. And I have to discharge. But no one's ever wanted to go in that sense. So they may be going to a nursing home or things like that. And people weren't really overly happy. But I think with this connection now, I've made some really good leeway with families where they didn't want to go but were really happy with the end result because we kept in touch. We've managed more complex medications in nursing homes that the nursing homes would never have done before. So by me going out to see them, we've kept people there that were comfortable with the right medicines. So it's quite big, really, in that respect. Just having them linked with the nursing homes now, they're more comfortable to phone. So they might phone me direct or they might phone the hospice. And we're giving them advice about how to manage end-of-life patients, which to me is amazing. It's just taking us to them and they're getting the service out there as well.
You mentioned earlier the time element. How soon should people start thinking about these sorts of things?
They're in the hospice?
No.
Or in general?
It's a sort of twofold question, really. So number one, kind of generally, and then I guess secondarily, you know, when if you do get to the point where you go, okay, this diagnosis or prognosis is not looking great, How does that side of things work?
It's very individual. And obviously, certainly for patients that come into the inpatient unit, it's about building up that rapport first and getting to know them. They may well have had some huge information from a different hospital and that's all there. And it's understanding what they're going through right at the time. Sometimes and often patients will just follow through and want to know. They want to know how long I've got, what we're going to do. And it's amazing. It's not what you ever expect. People are so black and white, very okay about it. Obviously, there's other people that get upset, but the general population that I've been through, I find are really, I don't know if it's just that they're stoic, but they just get it and they just, you know, I'm dying. You know, I'll have bacon and egg now, thanks very much. And sometimes it is very much like that. And it's really... I don't find talking about death sad because it's inevitable. So it's about encouraging people's perceptions to change. You know, we can prepare for death then. If we're open, we're excited at birth. No, you're not going to be excited at death, but we can't do anything about it. We can't change the fact that we're going to die. And so it's getting the best death possible. And I think if people are open about it more, certainly in the community, our age, you know, just talk about it. You know, I say what I want. I think, oh, I think I'll have some black horses with feathers and a coach, you know, a nice glass coach. But that's me. And you can do it in a way that's not... If you don't do it too serious, people don't tend to get upset. But you still get your point. You still get the conversation out there. And actually, the conversation will flow once it's started. I don't think I've experienced someone not wanting to talk about death, whether I bring it up or whether they bring it up. And I think that is timing, but it's something you just feel, so you know when the time's right.
And that's presumably, that'd be a very individual thing.
Yeah, absolutely, because everybody is so, so different. You know, death isn't the same for everybody. You know, communication about death is very different for everybody. How you talk about it, what language you use, and you have to talk to people at however they understand, and that's really important. So I could be talking, I don't know, in technology terms to one person, but actually very black and white, and this is how it's going to be to another. There's no plan. We don't think about what we're going to say before. I certainly don't before I go in. There's no preparation. I'll sit on the bed to have a chat, and if it's going to happen, it happens, and then we just go with it.
So that makes perfect sense to me, the idea that every one of those conversations would be, you know, unique and individual.
I think it's very different wherever you are. So I've worked in people's homes at home, and obviously I've done some community and I've done the inpatient unit. And I think it is very different. And I think at home, people initially are more open. And I think that's sometimes because normally when we go out to people at home, they are dying. Mm. And so we'll sit around somebody's bed and chat. And, you know, even after someone's died, we'll sit and have a cup of tea and a bit of toast, which sounds a bit weird, but it's what the family wants. You do what they want. Conversations about death, I think, is far from ready. You know, we've got a lot of work to do. I think for people to manage when the time comes, I think bereavement is huge, and the effects of bereavement on people, because they've not talked about death in the first place. So we've had people where they've never talked about death, they've never even talked about how their feelings are. They wouldn't say that they've loved someone, they wouldn't say anything, and then someone's dying and it's like trauma. Mm. They desperately want to say it but can't because they've never been able to say it or talk about anything. And some families have not, they don't know what the partner wanted, so they don't know if it's a cremation or funeral because they would never talk about it. And that's hard. You know, I'm very much now, and a lot more people are doing it, is book your own. Make your own funeral up. You can do what you like, and it's done. Or you've written them ideas down about what you like. It's quite traumatic for people to have to manage a death when they've not had the discussion with their family about what is it they would, well, what they'd want. Hmm. And that's really hard then afterwards.
And it's interesting you say about the bereavement as well, because it seems like it would be quite easy to not focus very much on the people who are left behind, so to speak. And is that, how does that work for you?
Well,
guys?
We try very hard. It's an inclusion. We include the family. It's not just the patient. So we are very, very on top of how the relatives feel. They're discussed as part of our MDT. So if we know or feel that relatives are struggling, we'll get or ask them if they need the support early, so we can get psychological services involved. And often that helps pre-bereavement, and it helps them through the bereavement. Mm. Some people are adamant, again, it's not just the hospice, it's the psychology bit that they can't get their head around, because they're probably, if you say I'm okay, they think you're mad, so they don't. Better take that bit. again, people say, oh no, I don't need it. But actually, if you can talk them round and then they've had it, they are amazed and they think, do you know what, I couldn't have done without that. And so we've got lots of angles that we can pull in from different things. You know, we've got Rosie, who's our spirituality lead, you know, and she's got a different hat on for different religions and different beliefs, and she is so easy to talk to. And so sometimes we use Rosie as an interim, and sometimes that's enough. And Rosie, they'll sit and talk for hours. And again, she will make that time, and I think time is the key. Don't talk to anybody unless you've got the time, I say, because you can't stop a conversation that's flowing. So, you know, I always say to everybody, you know, make sure if you're going to go in a room and sit and talk to someone, you don't need to go in 10 or 15 minutes, because it's not the right thing to do. And actually, you can get so much out of people. And I think they look very relieved when that conversation's come up. But yeah, we do have a laugh. I tell them I'm going to have a rave, and then we end up laughing.
That's great. So I'm super conscious of the time, Jackie, because understandably you are very busy. But to finish up with, is there kind of one piece of advice that you could maybe leave us with? One thing that you go, right, this is the key thing. Get this one nailed.
Communication, I think. Within your own families, be open, be honest. I think it's huge just being, and that's not one thing, that's quite a few. Just being open and honest about your feelings, about what you want. You know, death, as I said, death is inevitable. Let's make the most of it and get it right. We've only got that one chance, and it's so important to get it right.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much for your time today, Jackie. Really appreciate it. It was amazing.
To learn more about what the hospice do and how you might be able to get involved, please do visit their website, which is www.mountbatten.org.uk. That's mountbatten.org.uk. You can also find them at Facebook, where they are facebook.com/MountbattenIW. If you enjoyed this, please do check out my other podcast episodes, which you can find, well, wherever you get your podcasts. You can also find them at my website, which is www.joeredston.com. That's joeredston.com. And there you will also find my blog and details about my book as well. Thank you very much for listening, and I look forward to catching up with you again soon. Cheers.